Hey guys, I just want to say thanks again for all of the subscribers, followers, anybody who leaves a review or, you know, a 4 or 5 star review, I guess. It really means a lot to me. Anybody who's donating, you know, $1 to the podcast, it really does mean the world to me, and I really appreciate the support. Thanks.
Whatsoever beings exist throughout all galaxies, it doesn't make any difference. You are all of them. And when they come into being, that's you coming into being. You know that very well.
Hello and welcome back to Aliens, UFOs, and Ghost Stories. Today, I'm honored to be joined by Mike Cluland. Mike is a fantastic author. He has 4 books. I strongly encourage you guys to go out and buy them all. I've read 2 of his books twice over. I'm constantly flipping through and trying to learn more. I mean, all the time, really. If you guys are interested to learn more about Mike, I suggest you go back. I believe it was about 12 or 13 episodes in. Absolutely fascinating. His books are phenomenal. If you just type his name into Google, you can learn a lot about him, even if you don't type in Mike Cluland, spelled C-L-E-L-L-A-N-D. If you just write in owls and aliens to Google, he'll be the first person to pop up. I am absolutely thrilled to bring him back on. A lot of you guys know that my owl experience have increased tenfold. I'm not sure why, but they have. And we're going to talk about all about his books, his experience, and his research. In my humble opinion, Mike is far and away the foremost. What's the word I'm looking for? He's far and away the best researcher on the two subjects, as they seem to be going hand in hand for a lot of experiencers. Mike, would you like to say hi?
Welcome. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, thank you. I really do appreciate you coming back on. And very rarely can I, you know, just call, you know, like, you know, it's hard for some of the bigger names like Linda Moulton Howe, George Knapp, when you kind of call them out of the blue. It's not a very, you know, it's Mike's just really easy to contact. He's always willing. You know, if you go to MikeCluland.com, I was just browsing this earlier. You can actually, if you do have an owl experience and they seem to be related to your experience as a contactee, Mike would love to hear about your stories, even if it's just a synchronicity of some kind having to do with owls. Strongly recommend you guys go and check out his website. That's MikeCluland.com. Do I have that right, Mike?
You have perfect. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the reason I called, of course, was because of how much it has intensified since I've spoke to you last.
We talked about a week or two ago, and you just brought me up to speed about some of the things that have happened in the last year. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because once it started happening, you know, regularly, everybody I spoke to, from Preston Dennett, I'm trying to think, Mary Bassett, I'm not sure if you know her, John K. He has a very tough name. He's the head of Michigan's. He leads MUFON for the state of Michigan.
Oh,
he's
Bill Konkoleski.
Yeah, Konkoleski. He's a great guy.
He's right near you in Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not far at all. But yeah, everybody told me like, hey, you got to get a hold of Mike, and so I did. And you were kind enough to pick up and hear me ramble for what seemed like 10 minutes. And I just really appreciate that. And I guess I'm just trying to say, you know, I'm really glad that you're, you know, as kind as you are, because a lot of the big people in this community, you know, they're busy. So it's hard to pick up every call. So.
And I enjoy the podcasts you know, it's interesting because I have 4 books, and it's now we're in a chapter of like modern history where, you know, there used to be a way to promote books and the way to, you know, go to book signings and have a publisher help you out. And these are all self-published, and it's really like an uphill battle to try to get the word out. I mean, I don't have a budget. Like I don't have a you know, an advertising budget, let's say. So I just say yes to anyone who asks for a podcast, and that actually has been working pretty well. So, and I enjoy doing the podcast. So it's not like it's an issue or anything like that, but I'm doing like two a week in one form or another.
Yeah. Not to sound like a weirdo, but I basically, so the easiest way for me to find your interviews is to either go on Apple or Spotify. And then instead of searching a specific podcast, I'll just write your name, Mike Clelland. That's C-L-E-L-L-A-N-D. And if you guys want to learn more about Mike and hear multiple interviews, that's the easiest way to do it. And it'll essentially pull up every interview you've ever done. And if I had to guess, I'd probably listen to 8 to 12, somewhere in there. So,
yeah, that's 2 weeks of you know, or 2 or 3 weeks of my life, really, when you think about it, because I mean, but I got to say, you've probably heard me tell the same story too many times if you've heard, you know, heard me talk that many times. So,
well, it is a very fascinating story. And again, I encourage all of our listeners to go back and listen to that first episode, or simply just type in Mike Clelland to Apple or Spotify. You'll hear, or you'll see a list of all the interviews he's ever done. So, but I guess I was hoping, instead of just asking the same questions over and over, I'm curious, Mike, if you could kind of explain patterns. As I mentioned before, and as our listeners already know, they keep seeming to show up on Sundays, which is odd because I'm not religious. They keep showing up on Christ-related holidays. Easter, oh no, sorry, hold on. No, it was Christmas 2022, Easter 2023. Have you heard much about that, specifically Christ-related holidays or Sundays?
To a degree, sure. Yeah, like that's something I've been finding in the research that I'm doing, is that, you know, people have events that take place on Christmas in particular and Easter. Yeah, I have two separate women. Oh, you have the stories from the Messengers book, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a woman in there, and then I reference back to another woman in the Messengers. One woman is named Susan in the Messengers. She had an event, I'm pretty sure it was 2010, 13 years ago, where she had it's funny, she does say Kundalini awakening. I asked her about it. She had like an event where she felt like energy rushing up and down her spine. And she, I said, oh, that sounds like a Kundalini awakening. She said, no, that's not what it was. And then I have another woman in that I did a chapter on in Stories from the Messengers named Laura. And she had a Kundalini awakening experience with a powerful set of synchronicities surrounding it that also happened on Easter Sunday, 2010. So those patterns are pretty interesting. And there was an owl involved in the event with Susan, or two owls actually. And there was, just a bunch of powerful synchronicities involved in the story that Laura told. But Laura's chapter is, I know it's one of the longer chapters in the stories book. That's the one that has, she was in a car accident and consequently became a psychic after the car accident. Mm. And then she also had an owl experience, and it was not quite co-joined, but it happened very, very close, in close context with a UFO sighting. And so that's initially here. So owls and UFOs. I'm known as a guy who researches owls and UFOs, but it's a lot more than that. So that's initially when I was all on fire to do the first book. I wanted to make the argument. The first book is titled The Messengers. I wanted to make the argument that owls and UFOs are somehow connected. And the way I did that was just story after story after story that people had shared with me. Some of the stories were quick to tell. Some of the stories took a long time to tell. And I grouped them by themes and such. So I feel like I made a pretty good case that owls and UFOs are connected. Now, I'm going to take back up a little bit. I don't know the source of that connection, right? I don't know why they're connected. I can speculate and theorize, but that's not truth. That's just me riffing on what may or may not be true. But I'm very convinced that owls and UFOs seem to be connected. Now, in the intervening years. That the first book, The Messengers, was published in 2015. It took about 3 years to write. And so that's, you know, its inception was over a decade ago. Let's put it that way. What has happened is, in those intervening years, I am less connected directly to the UFO contact. And I've come up with five things that show up as a pattern specifically with owls. So people will see owls in connection to a UFO contact report. If you've read both the books, The Messengers and Stories from the Messengers, oh my gosh, you know what I mean. I mean, it's like all over the place in those stories. Mm-hmm. So one on the list would be UFOs, more specifically UFO contact, right? So, I mean, I have some examples. You know, someone sees a UFO far off in the distance and then has an owl sighting. That's pretty common, but it's usually when you really dig into this, the people who are having the sightings, I don't like the term abductee. It works in some contexts. It's a vocabulary word we're used to, UFO abductee. But again, I'm going to say this a lot. Let's take a few steps back. I think UFO contact is a more acceptable term, because abduction implies something, right? You know, if you abduct someone, you've taken them away from their home. You can go to jail for abducting someone, right? So what I'm finding is that, let me just say this, there's a pop culture understanding of what UFO abduction means. I talk to people all the time, every day, week after week. I'm talking with people who have had these experiences, and I so rarely hear the accounts of, oh, I was taken from my bedroom, or, oh, the car was stopped on a lonely road and I was taken to a flying saucer. Like, I've heard those stories, but let me tell you, they are a small, small part of the research. They are all you hear when you watch, you know, when you stream a documentary on UFO abduction, or you read a book by an abduction researcher. That's the kind of story you hear, but that's not what I'm finding. So something much more mysterious and elusive, and I dare say, I want to say spiritual. That's a rough word. I'll say something much more transformative is taking place. Okay, so let's back up again. Number one on the list, owls and UFO contact. Number two, three, the next three, it's hard to put a weight on which one. So these are in no particular order. Let's say number two is owls and meditation. People meditating will see owls. I get a lot of reports. Someone says, oh, I was meditating in my living room and I had an intention with my meditation. I opened my eyes and there was an owl staring at me through the window. Or I went outside and I closed my eyes and I meditated. When I opened my eyes, there was an owl on the branch right in front of me, locked eyes with me. Very, very common. Number three would be owls and psychedelics, most particularly mushrooms. I just got some stories. It's funny. This is so typical of how these synchronistic events play out. Like I've said, psychedelics, most notably mushrooms. People will take mushrooms and have, and I don't care, right? People, if you read my, if you read the reviews on Amazon, people give me a 1-star review and they say things like, this guy talked to people who took drugs and, you know, and he calls that evidence. That's not real. And it's like, well, people had a visionary experience, right? So if you're an apprentice shaman, you go into the jungle in Peru and you take ayahuasca and you see an owl in your visionary experience, and that changes the direction of your life and you become you take on the role of the village shaman. That's pretty important. It's happening. So I don't care if it's a visionary experience. If someone's taking a psychedelics in a ritual setting, wow, I take that very seriously. So owls and mushrooms, very common. Owls and shamanic initiation. This is well understood within the community of shamans. We live in a world now where there are no, well, let's say we live in the Western world, you and I do. I'm from Michigan. I'm certain there's shamans in Michigan, you know, but it's not like you can look them up in the phone book. So if we turn the clock back 400 years and we all lived in, you and I lived in South Dakota and someone in the village had a powerful experience with an owl, they could walk to the edge of the village and knock on the teepee and go in and sit with the shaman. And the shaman could play the, let's say the therapist for someone who's had a powerful experience. So what I'm finding is people during the shamanic initiation process are having owl experiences. I did a podcast one time and I kind of said, well, you talk to a shaman and this is what they say. And the guy in the post said, well, who talks to shamans? And I said, you write a book on owls. You're going to talk to some shamans. Mm. So, and then the fifth one would be owls and death. And death is the lore of the owl, like the folklore of the owl is morbid, right? That's like in Shakespeare, in Julius Caesar and in Macbeth, you know, there's like, there's an owl hooting off stage and it foretells the death, you know, the tragedy of the plot, both in Macbeth and I think in Julius Caesar, there was an owl that foretold a death. It's well understood in folklore, but that isn't what I'm finding. I'm finding almost the exact opposite. Well, I would say I am finding the exact opposite. I am finding stories where this is most often a parent. And a parent will, you know, die. And it would be, you know, from and the child or the adult child will go through a grieving process. And during this grieving process, an owl will show up, often very mysteriously, looking in the window, landing on the back porch, the same spot every day when they walk the dog. And they'll talk to the owl as if it is their dead parent. And in doing so, their grieving will be alleviated. I have a lot of examples of that. That is what I'm finding in the owls and death connection. It is not the morbid thing where people say, oh, if you hear an owl hooting, it means someone's going to die. Wow, I have no evidence of that. I do have one. Here's one story that I heard. Someone, someone's father had a heart attack and the ambulance came to the driveway and they loaded the father up into the ambulance and the person, the child, I think it was a man, got in the ambulance with his father. And before they closed the door, they're looking straight out the back door. There was an owl on the fence that faced the open ambulance door. He locked owls with them up for a moment and the doors closed and his father died. Mm. So that's one of the very few stories I have where an owl shows up before a death. So, and they're far outnumbered by these heartwarming stories. So I don't think the owl caused the death, but it is a little totem of that moment. Now, if the owl is a totem of the transformational process, I mean, that's the ultimate transformation is death. So I got way, you asked me one question, I went way around. You were asking about patterns, but I had to say that I'm seeing, so those are some of the patterns I'm seeing. So I got way out of bounds as far as the question. The issue of events taking place on Easter and Christmas. Let's go back to Whitley Strieber. This is the very first occasion in nonfiction where an owl is associated with UFO contact. There might be cases before Whitley Strieber's book, which came out in 1986, I think, but I can't find them. So, I mean, I've looked pretty hard. And I can't find them. I found some fiction references of owls in UFO contact, but not in nonfiction. So Whitley Strieber's story, Whitley Strieber went to bed on Christmas night in 1985. So December 25th, 1985, he had his experience sometime after midnight, technically the day after Christmas, the 26th, but he went to bed on Christmas night and then had an event on the 26th. So, and that key point. So in that event, I've footnoted it many times in the book Communion. I think it's on page 26. Is it right? 26? I'm thinking it might be 26 or 27. Page 27. If it was 26, that would be interesting, right? Because it's December 26th. I think it's 26 or 27. He had the memory he like woke up knowing something had happened. He had the powerful memory of like being on board a craft, and though he doesn't remember being escorted, if I remember the story correctly, he doesn't remember being escorted out of the bedroom. He just came to on board a craft. I might have that wrong. But when his wife said, "What happened?" he said, "There was an owl on the windowsill last night." That's a like he was distressed about his event of the night before. She asked, "What happened?" He said, "There was an owl on the windowsill." And he has since, after writing the book, said, "That doesn't make any sense, right? Why would I say that?" So he went up to the windowsill. Him and his wife went up to the windowsill. And it was wintertime in upstate New York. And it was Christmas, obviously, or just right around Christmas there. So, and there was snow on the roof and on the windowsill. But it had been, there had been no new snow. So the snow was a few days old. There were no footprints in the snow. So he knew there was no owl on the windowsill looking in the room. But that's what he said. So that's the first point in modern popular culture that I know of in a nonfiction book where owls are related to UFO contact. So here, to go ahead and interrupt, I held the floor for a long time.
Oh, no, don't ever worry about that. I just find it fascinating as far as the windowsill goes, my wife, while living in Dearborn, which I'm sure you're aware of because you just live here in Michigan too, when she was 7, 8 years old, she said that she walked past the upstairs window in the hallway while she was going to go to bed. And she said that there was the face of an owl, a huge owl. And I never understood what she meant. I was like, "Well, what do you mean you saw the face? Like, that doesn't even make sense. Was it like sitting on the outside of the window? Like it was sitting still? Was it flapping its wings? I just don't get what you mean." She said, I don't know, but it was the face of an owl. And I had her draw it for me. If we were doing video, I'm looking at it right now. It's right above my computer. She is a little kid. This is how she drew it. Little kid looking up to the window. It's enormous. You can only see it from its chest up. Seems to be a barn owl because of how she drew, you know, the little peaks on its head. And then the eyes, she drew almond shape and just pitch black. She just scribbled in the eyes like pitch black. So to me, that sounds, you know, kind of like what I've been seeing. So, or what I have seen. They're not always oversized like that, you know, every time, but.
Yeah. Yeah, very telling. So it's a genuine mystery. I don't have an answer, but you know, I've heard that story 100 times in one form or another.
Yeah, and then as far as you were talking about meditation and then owls appearing. So not only was I meditating at that CE5 a couple weeks back, and not only did I set my intention to see an owl, and I told my sister, thankfully, who was sitting right next to me so she could back me up. And then, you know, less than 5 minutes later, after being incredibly emotional, owl flew directly over my head. Thankfully, this was witnessed by 10 or 12 people. So, and then you were talking about shamanic chants just anything to do with shamanism, which is, to my understanding, almost entirely related to American Indians, or do I have that wrong?
No, it's all over the world. No, there's shamanic traditions. The traditions are very, very similar all over the world. So the word shaman, I think, comes from a word shaman or saman, and or saman, which is the name of the medicine man, let's say, the shaman in the Siberian cultures in Russia. So that's where it first came from. And there was a researcher, an English researcher, who wrote a book. Can't remember the name of the book now, where he studied the shamanic rituals and rites and almost the magic events that took place in among these people. And in the intervening 100 years or so, there's been a lot of research, you know, all over the world. So the traditions are very similar in South America, all throughout Africa, in Indonesia, all throughout the Americas. So the traditions are very, very similar in I don't want to say a primitive setting, but let's say a village type community setting all over the world.
Okay. But yeah, that's exactly what we were doing. So basically, it was two meditations broken up, say, by 30 minutes. You know, you had the first one. You kind of shared what you experienced. You know, everybody used the bathroom. We had slices of oranges, like, you know, just kind of took a break. And then we got back into another one. The other one, I didn't tell my sister the intention because I didn't know that I had one going into it. And out of nowhere, I thought, you know what, why don't I set my intent, like, out, you know, not out loud, telepathically, I guess, or just in my mind, I said, you know, if there's any of my Cherokee Indian ancestors here who want to join us during this meditation, this is after we did some shamanic chants. We did a sound bath, if I'm saying that right.
Yep.
Yeah. And burning sage, things along those lines. And then I never opened my eyes during that. I had, you know, I was, again, crying quite a bit, but never did I open my eyes. And then, you know, we hear the, you know, I was asking it stuff like, let us hear your music, you know, give us your knowledge, blah, 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 stuff like that. And right after I said music, I, honest to God, Mike, there was drumming in the background very faintly, and it sounded like it was quite a bit of ways, and it didn't last long. It probably lasts less than 5 seconds. So, you know, Kimberly said, does anybody have anything to share? And I instantly threw my hand up. I was like, did anybody hear drumming? And I think like maybe a third of us had. And then the next person to share was directly across from us. This is like a 30-foot wide circle. And he said, I don't know what happened, but when I opened my eyes, this guy was like a very clairvoyant person. He said, when I opened my eyes, there was American Indians like in a perfect circle about 10 to 15 feet behind us, standing in a circle. And were they there physically? Of course not. But him and Kimberly both said that they witnessed this. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
No, so the drumming you heard, let me just ask some questions. Was it like, was someone like playing Led Zeppelin in their garage beating on the drums, or was it, what did it sound like?
I can't say because it lasted for such a short period of time, but it wasn't like a dude practicing drums like to rock and roll. Can I say for sure that it was Indian drumming? No. I mean, had it gone on for a little bit longer than 3 to 5 seconds, I could say that, you know, that's what it sounded like. But, you know, had it been somebody drumming, you know, a half a mile away in their garage, I think they would have done it for a lot longer than, you know, 3 to 5 seconds. But So to me, I mean, that was a direct response to my intention. But yeah, it was pretty odd. And then, you know, owls have just been, so in the last 14 months, it's almost 15 now, the last 14 months, I've seen 17 owls. I'll have to check again. Every time I see them since I've spoke to you last, Mike, I write them down.
As do I. Yeah, I try to make a note of my own owl sightings. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, well, before that, it was only, you know, I saw one when I was 20 with my little sister, who ironically has a tattoo of an owl and a gray. And, you know, she doesn't even have any recollection of any experience.
Wait. Your sister
mm-hmm.
has an owl and a gray as far as two separate tattoos?
Correct. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And she has no recollection of any contact whatsoever. But the first time I ever saw one, I was with her. And so that was 20. And then I didn't see another one probably until I was early 30s. And I started the podcast when I was 34, 35. And they didn't really start showing up until I was suicidal. As soon as I became suicidal, I mean, I was already depressed for a long time. But as soon as I was starting to like think about it and act it, or, you know, plan on like what I was going to do and how I was going to do it, I was basically just going to, you know, tell my girlfriend at the time, like, hey, you know, I don't. And now my wife, I was like thinking of like how I could break it off so she wouldn't have to be, you know, in a relationship with a guy who just killed himself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I do actually, I do know what you mean. So we can talk about this. Keep going. But I do know. Yeah. What you mean.
But yeah, that's when they started showing up. I mean, I was desperate one day laying in bed on a Sunday. Swear to goodness, it was a Sunday. And my wife was still sleeping. She was sawing logs, you know, snoring pretty good. And I just said, you know, I had my eyes closed, but I wasn't asleep. And I basically was just asking, I started asking questions like, who am I? What a blah, blah, blah. And I got my first telepathic thought voice back. And it was an Egyptian word, ironically. And then, sorry, my nose is a little runny. And then once I realized that I had spirit guides and I was pretty confident on who they were, one was an Egyptian person, supposedly, who I'd lived with in a past life. And the other was my father's father. And so one day, same scenario, my wife's fast asleep. I'm depressed. I'm only sleeping like 0 to probably 3 or 4 hours on average. And I was laying in bed at probably 3, 4 in the morning. The room was pitch black, so I don't think it was actually in my room, of course. But I was just like, hey, if there's anybody here with me, can you show me what you look like? And in my mind's eye appeared an owl. And it wasn't facing me. It was facing the opposite direction. And I think once it realized that I wasn't freaking out and terrified, you know, I kind of was like, oh, owls, I love owls. And then I was thinking, I didn't ask for it, but I was like, well, I'd wonder what it looks like because it's not even facing me. And it slowly turned its head and his eyes were pitch black. They were almond shaped. And I'm staring at it. Still didn't really scare me that bad because, again, this is just in my mind's eye. I know it's not in the room. But then I saw shoulders like a human. I'm like, what? What is that? That doesn't even make sense. And then its neck, I think it was just starting to show me its true form. And I got scared and I started praying and basically telling it to go away. And it's never shown itself in that form ever again.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. So here, first of all, like I am 60 now. And then when I was 30, I was severely depressed. So half my lifetime ago. Like dangerously depressed. And I was engaged to be married. I don't want to talk too much about it. And I'll share a little bit about this, mm-hmm. but the relationship just crumbled. I just was like, just like, and my fiance at the time had no way to know what I was going through. Cause I was just so tied up in knots and unable to communicate it, but it was bad. And so suicide was right there. For me in my life right then, you know, just like I never did it, but it was an ever present thought. And it was during that time, this would have been the winter of 92, 93. And I have a story which I talk about in a couple of the books, and I've talked about it plenty, where I woke up in the middle of the night. I was all alone at a house in Maine. My fiance had left at that point, so I was alone. And I had just started working with a doctor, and this was before the advent of Prozac. That's how old I am. And I was taking another drug, which is no longer used. And but it did alleviate the symptoms of clinical depression, but it took a long time for it to take effect. So like weeks, you know. So I mean, I just equate that to being. Right. So you break your leg and you go to the emergency room, like, oh, that's gotta be painful. Here, we'll give you some painkillers, and the pain goes away. Right. So you're suicidal, it's emotional pain, you know, and turn your back clock back to 1993. So here's a drug. It's gonna take 3 weeks to take effect. Well, that's the longest 3 weeks. Oh my God. So it was during that time when the drug was starting to take effect. I was lying in bed. I woke up in bed. There was a bright light shining in the window. I don't know if I told this story the last time. And there were five gray beings, the classic gray beings with the big bald head and the black eyes and the skinny bodies walking towards the house. They were backlit by a bright light. It felt like that's what woke me up, the bright light. I had someone ask me sometime, well, how would a bright light wake you up? Right? Doesn't mm-hmm. just a light. And that was a good question. And I was like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. Also, when I dream, like if I dream I'm in my bedroom, right? The bedroom is always distorted somehow. It's always kind of tweaked somehow and it doesn't match real life. And this was exact. And so it was, so I wanted to dismiss it as a dream, but wow, I don't think I can completely. So these five beings were walking towards the house. I heard a voice in my head that said, oh yes, they're here. Now is the time to put your head on the pillow and shut down. Mm. And I just blocked out. I just boop, like just bing, like click, I was asleep. instantly, which is unusual in its own sense too. So in the next morning, I never even bothered to go out and look and see if there were footprints in the snow. Now, years later, many years later, I did a hypnosis session to alleviate depression. So I could talk about this as a long, complicated story, but just I say it was totally successful, right? So I went in and said, I met this woman at a conference. She was speaking at a UFO conference, or let's say a paranormal conference. I was giving a talk on owls at the same conference. We got into a conversation. I said, I want to do hypnosis to look into my experiences, my UFO experiences. And she was a very skilled therapist. I don't know if she's like a licensed therapist in any way, but just I've talked to a lot of therapists over the years, and so I know the good ones, and she would have been a great one. So, and she said, you know what I think you need a past life session. And that's what she did. So I did it, and it was about 3 hours on her couch, and when I sat up, I was cured. I knew I was cured. And she asked me questions about, and I won't go into the past life thing. It was super dramatic, and it was super emotional. A lot of crying and stuff. And I've often wondered if it just like an emotional story emerges, and you can purge those emotions through tears. Like I've talked to other therapists who do that, and they say, well, I think the crying is very therapeutic, but I don't know if that's how it works. But okay, when I was under, she knew about my experiences. She'd seen my talk. She brought it up. She said, the event when you looked out the window and saw the beings out the window, why were they there? And I said, to save my life. And she said, to save your life from what? And I said, suicide. This was under hypnosis. I didn't try. I wasn't self-editing. These words, I just blurted them out. So that does not make it true. I want to be very cautious to say, I want to be very cautious not to say that owls, excuse me, I call them owls, that aliens, I do that a lot, I mix those two up a lot, that aliens like prevented me from committing suicide. Now, all that said, I've been collecting stories. I'll tell you a beautiful story, and I may have told this last time. And I used to say this was a one-off, and I'm very cautious to tell a one-off. If I only have one example of a story, I usually don't share it. I wait till there's a pattern, and then I'll share the story. This was a one-off. At the time, I put it in the first book. Since then, it's no longer a one-off. I've had other people contact me with very, very similar stories. Woman contacts me. She's a happy grandmother. That's the first line of her thing. I'm a happy grandmother. And when I was a teenager, I was severely depressed. And I was going to kill myself. And I took my parents' car. And I was driving to a point in the forest, a little turnoff on the side of the road where I knew I was going to do it. And in the car with me, I had a hose and a pillow. And the hose was to take the exhaust into the car itself. And the pillow was so she could lay down in the back seat with her head on the pillow. So she's driving. She's about to pull in to the turnout. And as she's slowing down, she's got to put her foot on the brakes to slow down. An owl flies right up to the windshield. And she said it was so startling and so powerful in the headlights and right up against the windshield. And that it felt like they locked eyes for like 15 seconds and it flew off. She knows it was much shorter than that, but it felt like an eternity. And then she totally took it as a sign that things will get better. And so she turned around and went home, and now she's a happy grandmother. That was, you know, so the power of that story is repeated in so many stories. And this is what I'm finding, that owls are appearing. This, given her description, she was describing a real owl. The emotional impact of it felt like an eternity, but she's pretty clear that the owl just flew up right against the window and flew off. That sounds like a real owl. While there is no way to look at that story, there's no way to look at that story without saying the owl saved her life symbolically. So, and then you had an experience where you asked to see, was it your spirit guide?
Yeah. I mean, that's, I mean, whether or not I was a contactee at that point in my life, I wasn't sure. Even before 2 weeks ago, before that CE5, I was still sitting at like a 97%, because there's always that doubt in your mind where it's like, is this really happening or am I just losing it? But after Saturday, I'm at 100 out of 100. I mean, there's no way around it now. But at the time, I was just thinking, you know, maybe I have spirit guides. Maybe I can reach out to them for some help, because, you know, at that point I was desperate. So I wasn't religious, so I wouldn't pray to God. And I was so desperate. I was just trying to connect with anybody who could hear me, really, you know.
Well, I mean, this is like, you know, like if God is everything, right? I mean, that's a Christian. God is everything. God is the stars. God is the sand below us. God is, yeah. I mean, if God is everything, then you reach out to something, it's God, right? Mm. So on like a totally metaphysical level, sure. Like there's no distinction for me. Like I used to lie out under the stars and I would make a plea to the universe. I would just look up at the stars and say, universe, I'm open and receptive to whatever you have to offer. Wow. Did I get some powerful events showing up with that as my, I didn't call it a prayer. I called it an intention. I basically said I was asking the universe for help. I mean, you change the word universe for God. It's the same thing, right? You know, the great creator, the source, right? So Allah, whatever you want to say, you know, Buddha, Allah, Jesus. Yeah. Anyway, so the title of my second book is Owls, Accounts of Stories from the Messengers is the title. The subtitle is Owls, Accounts of Owls, UFOs, and a Deeper Reality. The deeper reality is what I'm most interested in presently. That deeper reality. I'm convinced there is a deeper reality running parallel to our reality. I feel like the intelligences and the people who reside in that other deeper reality can look into our reality freely. We, on the other hand, might only get a glimpse into that other reality, and oftentimes through something like meditation or intention. So, and I would also say that the glimpse we get will be distorted the way a dream is distorted. So you asked for an intention. You said you saw it in your mind's eye. And I would argue, cautiously, because I don't know, that you tapped into that deeper reality when you saw that visionary experience of the owl from behind, and then it turned around slowly, and you saw, you know, it had an owl face, but it had shoulders. So there's a story in the first Messenger's book. I think it was a pseudonym. I called her Tori, and she had an experience where she was alone in a condo, and it was like at a ski area in the summer. So summertime, she was at a ski area at a condo. She shared the condo with a bunch of people, and she just went up there alone for one night. And there was a great big windows, you know, the big sliding glass door windows. And there was a light downstairs, and there shouldn't be a light downstairs when she was trying to sleep. And the dog was barking, and it didn't seem like that didn't seem right. And then she went to sleep. And later she woke up, and there was a UFO, a flying saucer, like zipping around. Out, you know, she had a beautiful, wide, huge, open window, you know, like a big door wall, a glass door wall. And she was looking at this flying saucer. It would zip off in one direction. It would loop around. It would come back and would come in close and then fly off far away. And then she kind of drifted off and fell asleep. And then she woke up and it was daylight. And so she woke up and she looked out the window, and there was an owl, and the owl was flying back and forth, and it would fly up close to the window and then fly way off. And then the owl landed on the balcony. And it landed and quickly like turned and stood there with its back to her. Mm. And she was going to get up and close. She was scared. It scared her. She was going to get up and close the curtains and lock the door. And before she could get up, the owl turned its head. And this is a weird thing. She said, it's a woman. Like it was no longer to her in her eye or an owl anymore. It was a woman. And then she that's the last memory she has. Mm. So, wow, I started one. This is very typical of me. You start one story and it loops around. Then you can track through about five different stories. So that this is what I'm finding. There's this kind of eerie dream logic with this owl and UFO connection, right? So the story of her with the dog barking and being alone in the house and seeing the flying saucer and then seeing the owl doing the same motions as the flying saucer and then, you know, culminating with it's a woman. I mean, why is, you know, so I'm very cautious, like a real owl doesn't turn into a woman. She was struck. She didn't know how to explain it. She just said the voice in my head was, it's a woman. So this is the challenge of doing this research, is that we are tapping into this distorted dream realm, this deeper reality. You know, you meditated and asked to see an owl and then asked to contact your ancient Native American relatives, your elders, and you heard drumming, and then someone else said they saw Native Americans in a circle. Wow, that's really telling. I'll also say that the drumming, that classic drumming, that boom, 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 drumming. There's a book by Michael Harner called Cave and Cosmos, and he studied shamanism. He also wrote another book called The Way of the Shaman. In his book, Cave and Cosmos, so a shaman has to enter an altered reality in order to journey. Now, I know shamans who can simply meditate, and through intense focus and meditation, they can get an answer, right? So someone in the village or someone in the town, this was in a little town in upstate New York, someone in the town would say, oh, you know, I need some help. His name was Tom. Tom, I need some help. I get this issue. And he would just meditate. Other people will take mushrooms. Other people will go through rhythmic dancing, you know, dance all night. That's the classic kind of thing. And that's tribes all over Africa and North America will dance all night. And then in Michael Harner says that their drumming will induce this meditative state where you can have a shamanic journey and have a visionary experience. And it's that classic Indian beat that if you just had to imagine an Indian drummer's in a circle going boom, 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 that steady noise can put someone into an altered state of consciousness where they can have these powerful experiences. So very interesting that you heard drums and that there were also Native Americans. It doesn't matter to me, the same thing, right? I don't care if they're there real or if they're there in a visionary experience. You know, I don't understand how that works. But I know that the power and the symbolism is the same. The symbolism, like if someone asks, I need a sign, and then someone walks by with an owl t-shirt, that's just as vital to me as if they a real owl flew by, right? It's a symbol of an owl, is a symbol on a t-shirt, but that counts for me. So there, I did it. I went all around the block trying to answer your question. So,
oh no, I appreciate it. Yeah. So speaking of Indians, I thought to do this while I have, in my opinion, the most impressive expert on the subject, with the two related being UFOs and aliens. I'm sorry, aliens and owls.
UFO is three letters. Owl is three letters. I have misspelled those and mixed them up 10,000 times, I bet. So yeah,
wow.
They blur together so much that they're the same thing. So that doesn't, you and me both, we both make that mistake.
Yeah, I speak so often about owls to my family and friends and fellow experiencers that a lot of times I do the speak to text and it shows up as hour and it's terribly annoying. But I do.
Oh, you know what it shows up for me? It shows up for me as how odd.
Really?
If I say owl, it shows up how odd. Isn't that a good one? And the other thing it shows up is as I will.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I've also had
both of those are almost poetic little, like, do you know what a Zen koan is?
I don't believe so.
So a Zen koan, if you're a Zen monk, right, and you go into the monastery, the monk will say, we're going to meditate on a koan. And a koan is purposely absurd. So you can't answer it. Right. So that what is the sound of one hand clapping? That's a Zen koan. You know, the students would all meditate with the intention of understanding what is the sound of one hand clapping, right? One hand can't clap. So you're forced to look at something that's purposely absurd. And, you know, I will, or how odd. I mean, that's wonderful that those get confused for all in that way. Anyway, here, keep going. I interrupted. Forgive me.
Oh, no worries. So I thought to, I have a group text with my family members of, you know, of course, my mom, dad, all four of my sisters, and even a couple of nieces and nephews. And I sent this photo, which I actually just sent to you through Messenger. And in the photo are great grandma on my father's side, who was 100% Cherokee Indian. And her name was Lizzie Wolford. And I was asking all sorts of questions. Let's see what they said. She was disabled. She was essentially rescued from the Trail of Tears by a man who was 100% Scottish, who was my great-great-grandfather. But let's see. And then she was a medicine woman. So she would have people fly all the way out to Kentucky to have her work on, you know, a lot of times it was children. But I think it's fascinating. How often, I think I did have one more question here. Let's see. Oh, now I'm just asking, you know, how often have you guys seen owls in the wilderness? Not like at zoos, of course. My mom said, she said, in Farmington, I was with you, like meaning me, Jake. And then my sister, Tasha, who is also an experiencer, of course, of the four girls, it seems like it's just me and her. But she's not only seen them in the wild, her and her husband, who is not a believer whatsoever, have heard them while they're sleeping. And it sounds like they're inside the house, which is really, really strange.
Mm.
Have you heard that before? Because I believe I mentioned that to you last time. And I even had him confirm it, which, again, he is not a believer in this subject at all. And he's like, it's happened multiple times. It's woken us up. And it's either incredibly loud outside or it sounds like it's inside the house.
Well, like, so here's the thing that I often say, and I say this all the time. I haven't heard that story exactly, but I've heard many accounts with the same flavor and mood as that. Mm. Right. So I have not heard that account exactly, but I've heard many with the same flavor and mood. I think there's four. I can list four people right now. People have contacted me, people I've talked with that have had an owl in their house. Like they look in a room, there's an owl. They don't know how it got in the room. Maybe it came down the chimney. They don't know how it got in there. And event, you know, they go and open a window and the owl flies out. I don't know if I have other accounts. There's YouTube videos where people are like, whoa, the owl's in the house, and they're trying to chase it out with a broom or something. And, but of those four people, all of them are shamans.
Hmm.
Isn't that's kind of weird, right?
Absolutely.
there was a guy, there was an article of a guy who in Texas who had, an owl show up in his house and didn't know how it got in there. And he, I have a lot of stories where owls get in garages. That's something totally different right there. This is like, you know how they can get in a garage, but mm-hmm. owl in the house is something totally different. So, and this guy had an owl in the house and they did a little news report on him and it made the national news. And I called this guy up and I contacted him. I wanted to know like, what's going on? Is anything paranormal? And he laughed and he said, nope, nothing paranormal at all. And he said, but the response I got was just mind-blowing because people from all over were like so enthralled by his story. So he was like, wow, did this touch a nerve out there? People, this is such a mystical thing for other people. It was just somehow there was an owl in the house and he got some pictures of it. And it's a funny, he was a funny guy and he was perfect. But one woman, I'm not going to use her name. I don't think she'll have any problem with me telling the story. I've shared, she's given me permission to share other stories. She comes home and there's an owl. So there was a noise in the other room. And she's in the house and she's there's a noise in the other room. I think she woke up. I think that's how it was. She woke up, there was a noise in the other room. And she's like, oh, someone's in the house. Someone's in the house. Something's in the house. So she called the cops and the cops said, okay, don't go in that room. And then the cops show up at the house and they pull their guns and they open the door and there's an owl in the room. So it's just an owl. And she said, oh, okay, well, what do we do now? And I said, well, we're going to call the animal rescue service. And they're going to come and get it. And she said, I can get it. And I said, no. Listen to us. We're calling the animal rescue service. They're going to go get it. And she said, I work for the animal rescue service. If you call them, they're going to send me. What a weird synchronicity is that? Like, I'm just delighted in some ways and amazed by the circular, almost playful and absurd logic, or lack of logic, let's say, that shows up in these stories. Like the cops were saying, don't go in that room. We have to call someone special to get the owl out. And she said, I'm that special person. Mm. You're going to call me. You make that phone call, my phone's going to ring.
Wow. Yeah, that's almost reminiscent of, and my listeners have heard this enough, but the owl that I rehabbed, so every sanctuary that I called, they're like, we're not accepting owls right now. And I just didn't understand why. And they were saying it's because of the bird flu. I believe mm-hmm. it's called avian.
Yep, avian flu, yeah.
Yeah. So instead of just, you know, letting this poor thing most likely die, because it wasn't flying for some reason, I just went and picked it up. And thankfully, I only had to...
How did you pick it up? I want to know.
So I got to be vague here, but I work at a place, I can't say where, in Michigan, of course, where my job has a lot to do with owls, or I'm sorry, has a lot to do with animals and removing them when they become problematic. And I was working there for less than a week, and all I do all day is answer phones and set schedules. So I answered the phone. They said, hey, you know, we have an owl on our porch, and I can't remember. I thought it was Detroit, and how much to remove it. And I was like, you know what? I don't know that one. I was never trained on that. Call the owner. He's been there. He's been in the industry for 19 years, runs a wildly successful business. Very, very impressive business. And I said, hey, man, how much do a live extraction on an owl? And he laughed. He's like, are you being serious? I'm like, I'm being dead serious. I just got a call. This is less than a week of when I started working there. He's like, not only do we not do that, but I've never even heard of that. And he knows pretty much all the companies that do what he does in the Metro Detroit area. And he's like, just call, tell him to call DNR. I don't know. So I did. And I wish I hadn't. I wish I would have just went and picked that one up. And then 5 or 6 weeks later, this was only 2 weeks ago. Same deal. It was a Thursday. I get a call and it's about an owl. It's in Allen Park and they're like, it's not flying. We try to scare it away. It won't fly away. We think it's either sick or injured. Maybe it has a broken wing. And I call my boss and he's like, same thing. First he thought I was messing with him. I'm like, I'm not messing with you. I'm just like, we can't do anything for these people. He's like, tell him to call DNR or like Howell Nature Center or something. And I called him back. I'm like, hey, I'm really sorry. You may just have to contact DNR. And then I thought about it all night and I felt guilty about it. And I felt bad about the owl. And then the next morning, it was Friday. And before my shift started at 9, I created a t-shirt with a logo. It just says Aliens, UFOs, and Ghost Stories. And there's a big owl on it. And then that was before my shift started. And then while I was working, probably around noon, Facebook popped up and it said, hey, you know how that they do this thing like a year ago today, this is what you're doing. You took a photo of you and your mom at lunch. It said, September 28th, 2012. And it was a photo of me holding an owl for the very first time in my life at a Renaissance festival. Exactly 11 years to the day, September 28th, 2023, I go and pick up an owl. I rescue an owl. The day that it finally flew away was September 30th. My mom sent me a photo before it flew away. And she said something along the lines of, this is getting weird. And this is before the owl flew away. And it was a video I had sent her September 30th, 2016, which is exactly 7 years ago to the day, you know, where it flies away. And it was a video of an owl. Now, is that just a weird coincidence? I don't think so. I think that's an incredible synchronicity. It just doesn't seem to make sense. And then, you know, it stewed on me all night. I felt guilty about it. And I said, you know what, let me call my boss and see if I can ask him if I can just do this after hours, you know, on my dime, not his. He's like, I don't care. Go ahead and do it. So I did. And when I did the CE5, the owl had already been in my care for 24 hours. I had to leave the owl, go to the CE5, and ask for an owl to fly, or not specifically fly. I just wanted to hear or see one. And it flew directly over my head, probably 12 or 15 feet. And then I went home the next day, you know, because every day at night I would leave the cage wide open, hoping it would fly away. And then Sunday it finally did, which again, Sunday just keeps coming up like over and over and over. It's really strange. So. All right. I really appreciate all of our listeners. This interview lasted a little over 2 hours. Really got pretty juicy towards the end. The last hour will be available for our subscribers and our Patreon followers. Thanks, guys. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. It helps a lot. See you next week. Today's outro is Calling All Hybrids by Skits the PLK. If you like his stuff, go to schizomusic.com. I'ma do this for my hybrids, yeah. From a different world, looking to provide us with knowledge, wishing that we all just stop the violence. They try to show us how to build, but we always demolish, yeah. Listen, I'm here to reach out to you. You can ask me anything, I'll never lie to you. If you came in from above, then I'ma ride for you. If you're only spreading love, then I would die for you, huh. That's crazy, right? You can call it what you want, but through the weeds we getting blunt. It isn't time to play around and go to lunch, when the ops could destroy the whole planet in a month. I'm the kind of contactee that'll contact any kind me with a compact beat. Yeah. Just to see the starship gleam in the middle of the night with my team. If you feel without me, then you might be a hybrid. Bare minimum a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. You might be a hybrid. Bare minimum a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. Try to take a minute to understand where you're finna. When you're living for the love of it, you get love in your spirit. I guess it's only human to sit and stew in your feelings. So I think we need a hybrid to come and show us the healing. Techniques used by the ancient ones through vibration. We can meditate for fun. Who would have thought a couple breaths could replace a gun? Let's get mindful. Let the grace overrun the streets till it reaches every mind that shines like me. I'm living for it, but I swear that I'm dying to see the hybrids coming forth with honesty. To let us know we're not alone in this odyssey. Tell the deep state that I need an apology. For suppressing technology and using taxes as an excuse for robbing me. If it bothers you just like it bothers me, then you might be a hybrid. Bare minimum a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. I'm here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. You might be a hybrid. Bare minimum a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. I feel the connection to all of you. I wanna know if we share the same point of view. Dialogue overdue. I'm bridging the gap, but instead of a bridge, it's a portal. And I'm moving right through it to prove that I truly adore you. Message to all of you, I wanna know. If you got it all on the moon, please tell me what to do. I'm bridging the gap, but instead of a bridge, it's a portal. If you live for the moment, but know that your tone is immortal. Then you might be a hybrid, bare minimum a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed, here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a
a hybrid. Give me the knowledge that humanity needs. You might be a hybrid. Bare minimum a contact fee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. Peace and love, love and light.
Beings exist throughout all galaxies. It doesn't make any difference. You are all of them. And when they come into being, that's you coming into being. You know that very well.